Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us, and I am Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We welcome you to the show. Today is Thursday, February the 12th, 2015. And our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And your voice sounds much, much better. A little better than mine, which is still a little on the scratchy side, but moving in the right direction. We have another absolutely awesome day here in Pompano Beach, Florida. Bright sunshine, about 75 degrees, and absolutely gorgeous. And so we appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with each of you. We are heading into the final workshop in our series at UTC, Universal Truth Center in Miami, if you'd like to join us tonight. We're going to be there at 6:30 doing the workshop, Getting the Stress You Need. And we just scheduled yesterday afternoon, actually. It seems to be a part of this particular tour, more so than ever, but we just scheduled an extra series of workshops at UTC. So we're going to be back there in February doing 3 more days of workshops.
In March. In March.
Yes, March the
15, 16, 17.
Yeah, so mark that on your calendar, March 15, 16, 17. We'll be doing the Healing Through Relationships series. So we'll start on Sunday afternoon, the 15th, and do Healing Through Relationships. And then Monday night, Communication. Did you hear what I think I said? And Tuesday, we'll do Codependence, Interdependence. So we've added those on top of the schedule. They're on the website now, so you can certainly download those flyers, put it on your calendar, and come and play with us. Otherwise, starting this Sunday, we'll be in Fort Lauderdale at CSL doing a full week of workshops there, starting Sunday through the following Saturday. So we've got lots going on, and we'll be in, we have a week off in between, right, Jeannie? And then we're in Pompano for a week.
That's correct.
So lots of good things happening, and the work is moving. We are moving, and all things heading in the direction of every mind, heart, and being on the planet, having free access to the principles of first century Aramaic forgiveness. And, of course, that idea of forgiveness being the opposite of what our culture teaches, I think probably the greatest disaster to ever befall humanity is that we have the idea of forgiveness, which in its origins was, if you're in pain, if you're in turmoil, if you're, in some sort of trauma, here we have a tool. You can go inside yourself and remove the root of your pain, your turmoil, or your trauma. And the disaster is that that word forgive was changed to the Greek idea of pardoning. We were all brought up with the idea that if we're in pain, it's, of course, somebody else's fault. And all we have to do is let them off the hook. So we've been handed an idea that, well, I just let somebody else off the hook for the pain that's happening inside of me, and then I've forgiven which of course has nothing whatsoever to do with forgiveness. And when we let somebody else off the hook, that is accurately defined as pardoning, because we may think they have something to do with what's going on inside of us, we've done absolutely nothing to address or to remove the root of the pain or the turmoil or the trauma that we're in. And if you never learn to remove the root of any form of pain, turmoil, or trauma that your physiology can produce, then you get to do it again and again and again until you say, maybe it's time for me to do some work here and remove this root of pain. And that's accurately defined as forgiveness in the first century Aramaic language. So we're glad that you're here to share this space with us. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see how that young man be.
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Awesome.
Having another wonderful day here in Illinois and delighting to share the tools and looking forward to another support group tonight. I had even more lovely comments about the group on Tuesday, so just more evidence that as people choose to remove what doesn't belong in their system, their lives improve. And the ripple effect is just a delight to watch. So and the concept of synchronicity, you know, I first came across this years ago when I was reading about Carl Jung, and I had I spent most of my early career thinking that I needed to maintain a level of credibility by sticking to what could be proven with the senses and machines and x-rays and align myself with the medical doctors. And then I ran across the concept of synchronicity and the concept of archetypes and the collective unconscious that Jung talked about in his writings, and it just seemed so out there, so completely bizarre. And then I had a few people in my life that I really trusted and respected who not only read the stuff that Jung put out, but were observing things in their lives that seemed to demonstrate to them beyond a shadow of a doubt that we're all connected. And this concept of things are happening just by coincidence is ridiculous, that there is no coincidence, that everything happens for a reason and it's connected. And it's not always a reason that my conscious logical mind would understand or could come up with. And over the years, I've moved more and more into realizing, as I've heard people like you, Michael, talk about Einstein's and David Bohm's understanding and Max Planck's understanding of how there is no matter and everything is energy and all energy is connected, and the concept of the mirror neurons in the brain and the concept of entanglement and Indira's web, which is an East Indian concept that goes back thousands of years, that's really basically the same as Max Planck's idea that there is this fundamental level at which everything is connected energetically. And I started softening and looking at the possibility that not only is it a nice theory, but it's actually operating all day, every day in my life. And oddly enough, I know it won't feel odd to you, Michael, but oddly enough, one of the things I had to do to be able to allow myself to see what was right there in front of me to see and experience it more deeply was cancel my need, cancel my goal, cancel my focus on getting to be seen as scientific and credible and having the answers and being aligned with you know, one expert profession or another. And the more I've done that, the more I have direct access and awareness. It's not really access. The access has always been there. But more conscious awareness of these fabulous connections and this, what Jung would call synchronicity. And then I get better access to my own intuition. So maybe, I don't know, you know, if your voice is up to it today, but you might talk a little bit about, because I know you teach a seminar on that, developing tools for developing the intuition and learning to tap into that still small voice, which every spiritual teacher that I've ever resonated deeply with, when you get into their teachings, they say, everyone has access to this. We simply don't put ourselves in alignment with it. We don't put ourselves in a place where we can slow down enough to hear it. Or if we do, we assume it's a random, weird thought and we don't follow through by acting on it. So that's the what's top of mind for me today, is this, the softening in me and the opening more to the intuitive side. And maybe you would be willing to talk a little bit about that spiritual faculty of intuition.
Cool idea. It's nice that that's on your mind. And, you know, I think that it behooves us each to be fundamentalists in order that intuition works. And that is that when you're a fundamentalist, you always make sure that the fun comes before the mental. And when you tap into the aliveness and the fun of the universe, your intuition becomes the lead. It becomes a guide, and it's something that is not rational. It doesn't come from the rational mind. I love how Einstein talked about the rational mind as a servant and the intuitive mind as a sacred gift, and that we've, in our culture, we have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. As though the gift means nothing. And yet Einstein himself says that 90% of his work was intuition. And I like to break that work down into inner tutor, that we have a teacher within us, and it aligns perfectly then with the ancient Aramaic idea of Ruach HaKodesh. And Ruach HaKodesh in Aramaic being the terms that have been described or have been translated by the Greeks as the Holy Spirit, but nothing to do with a disembodied spirit being, but rather the fact that inside of us there is a teacher. There is a literal, actual, elemental force in us that when we acknowledge her, when we live in relationship with her, that we will be taught the truth, and that we are, if we're available to it, rather than stuck in our rational minds, which tends to run the game for most people. And it's that rational mind that lies to us all the time. It always has an answer that's based in some sort of physical phenomenon in a world where, in fact, there's not even physical. As you referred to, I love how Max Planck said it, that when he was receiving the Nobel Prize in physics, he says, as a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. Our entire world is made of exceedingly small patterns, smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another within another. Our entire world is made of this energy, and we're understanding more and more the quantum physics of that, and the fact that we have, when we live in awareness of that, a huge amount to say about what happens in our world by the quanta, by the energetic patterns that we choose to bring into expression around us through our own creative faculties. And so it's certainly a huge topic that could consume years and in understanding and, of course, bringing forward into expression. So just listening to that, and yes, we do. It's actually been a couple of years since we've had enough people who really wanted to do that 9-day intuitive development, but we do have an intensive that we spend 9 full days just in a practicum on tapping into intuition and getting feedback for information gained without recourse to the mind, without recourse to physical senses. And it's always pretty awesome when we do that intensive to see how intuitive people really are and how we get to tap in. It certainly is a whole different way to live. You know, the animal world, we talk about the animal having a sixth sense, and they're just functioning out of the intuition, and they know things long before the humans do. You know, a storm's coming, and the animals know. And they know because they tap into that knowing without recourse to reason, without recourse to physical, so-called physical evidence and physical substance. So it's definitely transitioning from a material-based world where everything has been dissected and broken down into pieces and physical parts, and that the energy that we call physical is such a small fraction of the whole that we could say it's negligible compared to what's actually going on in this energetic universe of human beings. And when we really wake up to that, who knows is going to be possible? Who knows what we'll be creating, what we'll be empowering in our world, as opposed to the things that we've been locked in through our senses. So, good topic to bring up.
Is there a quick exercise you could recommend that would get people started a little bit more into tapping into that intuitive sense?
One of the best things I know to do to tap into the intuitive faculty is simply to rely more on your breath than you do on your mind, is to just to breathe and allow yourself to get quiet. You know, Yeshua spoke about going into the closet and closing the door, and that is just shut down the so-called physical senses. And as we shut down the physical senses and give ourselves time, it's interesting. There's a book called Magical Child. Actually, it may be one of two books, Magical Child and Magical Child Matures by Joseph Chilton Pierce. And Pierce recounts the research that shows a common link between brilliant, happy children. And the common link is that those brilliant, happy children all had plenty of blank staring time. In other words, they got to listen to their intuition. Something that for most of us, we were brought up being slapped on the wrist and told we had to get to work. And you're sitting in a classroom getting your blank staring time in, and along comes a teacher with a ruler and slaps your wrist. Get back to work. Don't you know we've got a job for you? We need to keep you locked into your rational mind, because that's the one that is going to keep you working for the man all your life and keep you from entering into the higher realms of knowing and awareness. So we suggest that people take time every day. Meditation is a powerful tool for opening into that other realm and activating the antenna, so to speak, the faculties of the subtler states of being that go beyond the five physical senses. So breathing and meditation would be two of the big ones for me.
All right, then. I'll get on it a little bit more.
Aha. Awesome. Well, let's check with Jeannie and see if that young lady has got anybody with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the well, let's say hello.
It's area code 813. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Shirley in Tampa, Florida.
Hey, welcome, young lady. We get blessed.
Hi.
We get to hear from you 2 days in a row. How awesome is that?
Well, you know, stuff just keeps coming up, right?
That's the idea.
And you say to ask questions online so that it might even help other people. So
Absolutely. Here
is a new situation today. Jeanette and I are starting a new, you know, support group, and we've done the first one. And so this question is, we have new people that have not done your workshops that are interested in coming. And the way we started doing this was to show part of your film and then do a worksheet. Well, we haven't even got to the worksheet part of your film. So one of my questions is, how do people in support groups handle when brand new people come in, and you've already been like experienced with some of the techniques that you've done already? Am I saying that right?
Sounds so right on track. And Dr.
Brand
Tim.
New people.
And we'll call on Dr. Tim for that. He's got the most expertise in the room on that one. Tim?
Thank you.
Well, I learned this the hard way. I watched a couple of other people have groups and stumble and fall because they tried the approach of every time somebody new came in, starting over, trying to explain the whole thing from the beginning or restarting the video of why is this happening to me again. So what we have taken to and what has really helped us as a group, and of course, that's the only thing I can attest to. I can't attest to whether or not this is the best thing for the newcomers, but I can tell you this is the best thing for the life of our group, and we've had lots of newcomers. Some have stayed. Some have just dipped in their toe for a session or two and left. But what we do is we just do our group. And so each week we play an hour of an audio or an hour of a video of either Dr. Michael Rice or Dale Allen Hoffman or some other very, very specifically related talk, tool, technique to these concepts, that it's all an inside job and I need to cancel and remove from myself everything that's less than love. So anybody who speaks like that, probably 95% of what we do in our work is Michael Rice's videos. And we do 1 hour of the video, and then we discuss, and then we do the worksheet process. So people who come in, they often come in when we're doing the second half of one of Michael's lectures, and they might come in when we're doing the second half of a lecture like codependence to interdependence. And he might have already introduced the tool for that video in the first hour. So people will come in, and they don't know what he's talking about, but we let them watch the video with us, and then afterwards we have 20 minutes to a half an hour where we can have questions and discuss. And then we spend the last 40 or 50 minutes doing worksheets. And people either get into the flow and ask their questions, or they sit back and listen, and they learn from the questions everybody else has. So that's how we've done it. That's been most successful for the health of the group. And as I said, there might have been people who were newcomers who didn't come back because we didn't start from scratch, or they felt they couldn't pick it up. But most of the time, they're just so warmly welcomed by the other group members, and people are so willing to spend time with them after the group or answer their questions during the group that it just flows and everybody gets benefits.
So you would suggest, though, we teach them every time how to do the worksheet that's important in the support group?
Well, we offer the worksheet process in probably 98% of our groups. There have been a few times where the discussion from the video was so robust, and then the feedback or questions people had about previous worksheets they did was so intense that we didn't have enough time for somebody to do an actual worksheet. But 98 or 99% of the time, we watch a video, we take a short break, we come back and answer questions, and then we ask who in the room would like support in doing a worksheet out loud. and we pass the worksheets out, and we tell people, you may just take notes about the worksheet Sally is going to do out loud that Dr. Tim is going to coach her through. Or you may use the material that you're hearing as Dr. Tim is coaching Brian through his worksheet to work on your own issue and fill out your own worksheet. Or you can just sit there and listen and see what you soak up and then take a couple worksheets home with you and try it on your own. And we tell them about the radio show, and we tell them about the archives where they can listen to more explanations of how to do the worksheets and how they can download their own worksheets. And then whoever, George or Brian or Sally, they say what their problem is, and I coach them through the worksheet, reading every word on the worksheet and pausing to explain the critical terms like carbon-based memory and sustained incoherence and RACMA and Ruka Dukucha, and everybody gets to hear that each time. And so the regular group members are working on their own worksheets, and they may move ahead a little faster, or they may sit and listen and get another set of brain cells firing in them when I talk about what Ruka Dukucha means from the ancient Aramaic. So that's how we do it. And then we have time at the end. Usually we run right up near the end, but then I ask, does anybody have any questions, either for the person who did the worksheet or about their own worksheet?
Well, you put that very well. We will try it, and we will let you know how all this works out.
Well,
thank you so much, Dr. Tim.
Well, you're welcome, and let me know if I can be of any support.
I will.
Awesome. Great answer. And, yeah, if people observe others working through the worksheet process, I think that's as powerful as sitting in, you know, getting every idea of the workshop. And over time, with a little bit of osmosis, people will start to dig in deeper and deeper levels. Some support groups also will make a video available for loan or rental, and so somebody can who comes into the group late and is sort of lost in the middle of it, that's another option too, another possibility. Cool. Well, we're glad you're up to it, and any other way we can support you, let us know.
Well, I'll be in touch. Don't worry about that.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, Shirley. Blessings, Artie.
Yes, and thank you, Shirley, for extending the work and making it available to more people. That's
and
a true blessing.
Jeanette. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Shirley. Did you get the email where I sent back the flyer so that you can revise it?
Thank you much for your immediate attention to that.
Oh, you're welcome. You're more than welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, bye.
Bye. We do have a question in the chat room, and they were asking, how could a teacher, this is a person who is a teacher at a school, and they were wanting how could a teacher incorporate this into lessons in school and within the content of a lesson and to bring to cultivate the spiritual practices into the classroom. And my response was that I would present it out loud for you all to address. However, you know, I said that it depends on the school. We've presented at different universities and elementary schools and high schools, and depending on the school itself, you know, some of them don't want you to even mention God, but you can present it in different ways. It's not just a spiritual practice. I mean, it is, but you can present it as physics or science or different things. How can you address that, gentlemen?
Well, the best way I know for a teacher to take it and bring it into the classroom is to follow the lead of Julie Eversick. You know, Julie wrote the book Healing Children, Loving Children, and if you don't have that, you might want to jump on our website and order it. The latest version is now back in print and available. And so you might just give Julie's book a read, and she's just got a huge amount of information for integrating this into the classroom, right from kindergarten to grade one, and making it available for teachers. And so perhaps Julie's on the line, and if she is, maybe she'd raise her hand, and maybe we could get some input from the master herself on bringing us into the classroom. Julie, are you with us?
I believe her hand just went up. 417, you're on
awesome.
The air. This is Julie.
Hey, I'm a little
hi.
Out of breath. I was running, so hi. Yeah, I'm more than willing to have her call me if she would like to call me on the house phone and we could talk about it. There's all kinds of ways to bring it in. And, you know, certainly I would probably, at this point in time, you know, maybe talk to my principal about it and things like that, but I had fun, and it certainly changed the dynamics in my classroom. It was the most powerful experience, and great to see, great to be part of. So I'm more than willing. I mean, if she reads my book, she'll get a lot of information, and if she would like to talk with me, I'll be very much available. I think my phone number is on, you know, the website. If not, if you'd like me to get it to you now, I will.
Sure, go for it.
Okay, so it's 417-273-4060, and welcome the call.
Cool. Share with us some of the changes you've seen in the classroom when you started to bring the tools in, you know, before tools and after tools. What kind of shifts and changes have you seen?
Well, you know, there was just a lot of shifts in me to begin with because, you know, what I really wanted was the children to cooperate with me, and I realized I wasn't necessarily cooperating with them or with life. So I had to, you know, really take a look at that. What does really cooperation mean, working together? What does that mean for rather than the initial control? But I thought what's considered by the colleges is an inner-city situation where a lot of the children were on low income, and a lot of them were just had one parent. So we started off with, you know, some difficulty right away with, you know, not being nurtured as much as they could have been. However, what I noticed the most is over time as I strengthened myself, I also, you know, was able to strengthen them. And they started to take such great responsibility for themselves. It was amazing to see how they began to practice what I taught. They really wanted to do life differently. And that was exciting for me to see because, you know, I thought they were going to be in resistance, but the adult is more in resistance than the child. The child likes to empower themselves. They like to be able to feel that they're handling the rules and they're following the direction that the teacher gave. I was just totally blessed and amazed. And so what I saw was in the beginning where I had to learn how to say what I mean and mean what I say, and to back it up, to be willing to back it up, that I was going to come across as authentic and I was really meaning what I was teaching and I was going to do it too. And I asked them to hold me accountable, which most children don't ever get asked that, to hold, you know, that you hold the adult accountable. But I asked them to hold me accountable for what I was asking them to do, I wanted to do too. So we were working together, and as we worked together, I noticed, and as the years went by, you know, it was easier and easier. In the beginning, I must admit that it was a challenge for me. I probably did on the average of between 5 and 10 worksheets every day because I was being triggered in my desire to do something different and to get away from the control program, if that's the best way I could put it, where, you know, I control them and they respond by, you know, either fear or whatever tactics, but now to cooperate and work together. So I had a lot of work to do in that arena, but it was well worth it. The book is, you know, gives a lot of that information. However, the experience is really, that's really the blessing. Okay.
Yay. Awesome. You certainly, made huge contributions to a lot of young lives in your tenure at school. It's certainly a blessing.
Thank you. I do. I can remember when I had children that had such awful behavior problems, and you know they were just so off target in their choices. And of course, we know we learned to use regulatory speech, and we learned to, you know, start to handle those. And I can remember this one little guy who always, every time he went outside to recess, was getting into a fight, and he was my biggest student. And I kept telling him, I said, you know, we have a law called law of cause and effect, and, you know, although you may not have this experience right away, but you want to be aware about what you're doing, you know, because it can come back. And one day, you know, he stopped his behavior. And, of course, he had learned the children's commitment, and he stopped his behavior and said, you know, I remember what Mrs. Haverstick has been telling me. I need to stop this. I don't want this coming back to me, either now or another time, and I'm going to just stop it. And right in the action of actually, really, he told me he was going to break this child's arm, he stopped, and he, from the rest of the time, for the rest of the year, his behavior was entirely different. And he came in and he shared it with me right away. He goes, I get it. I have to stop this behavior. But he got it from me talking to him every day about it, building the brain cells, building the understanding that we can do life differently. And this is how we do it. And that's where the strength of the teacher comes, because that's not going to happen the first time you share this information. It's going to happen after you say it and you do it and you say it and you do it. And the biggest thing, as Dr. Tim always talks about, is to model it. And that's a challenge for
him. I'll bet he still hears your voice in his head. And I know that was years ago. I bet he still hears your voice when he's ready to do one of those crazy behaviors and lives in a whole different world because of it.
Yeah, well, his whole world changed. I mean, even in second grade, I know that there was no more talk about him and his behavior. It was really much more on target, becoming a better student. And because he was, a larger male child, he tended to take a different role of, you know, being more supportive of others rather than, you know, doing the bully role. So it was a great moment. I mean, even his mom came in and, you know, she shared with me, I think I have it on some video, where she just said that he's just a different boy. So, but the strength of the teacher is the modeling it and staying with it, being willing to stay with it, do your own process, because there you are definitely going to be needing to do that, to stay in a space of peace and being able to see, have clarity, you know, to be to see that you're on the right track. That's important.
Well, and I know that, Julie, every once in a while I get a phone call from you. We'd be on the road, and there would Julie's voice be. And I'm on my 30th worksheet. I took a well day off of school. Had a rough day yesterday, and she'd literally be on her 30th worksheet working through the issues that came up for her during the class. And that's another important part of bringing it into the classroom is willingness to do your own work. That's how you get to bring it into the classroom and model it, because the modeling is more powerful than anything.
Right. Well, you're accurate on that. I had worksheets in my classroom. I had a file in my file drawer, and then what I would do is at lunchtime, you know, if something was happening in the classroom, I would just fill out the top part of my worksheet so that I would know what I need to be responsible for that night or even later on the day if I happen to have a free period to address it. So, again, my goal, my direction, my intention was to be that space of love. And when, you know, something less than that comes up, you know, it resonates right to the conscious level. So to be able to breathe and get back to love, sometimes I have to, you know, take my lunch hour and do some worksheets. So that was, again, it's a huge commitment, but it's certainly, when that day happened that they took total responsibility without me being there for about 2.5 hours, passed out the work, they went to breakfast, but depressed breakfast tickets.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I was unable, because we had our electric out, so I was unable to open the garage door, so I was going to be late, and our secretary was going to put somebody in my classroom, and that was first grade, but she forgot. She just didn't remember to do it, and so they were in the classroom from about 8 o'clock until about maybe 20 of 11, and they had totally handle the whole thing. They had passed out their breakfast tickets, which means they have to read their name on the ticket, and they were 5, 6, and 7-year-olds. And they went to breakfast, most of them go to breakfast, and then they passed out their folders. They passed out all the work. They, you know, I have it always on the board, the directions of 1, 2, 3, where to go. But, you know, there was, I wasn't there to do the reading groups. But anyway, when a couple of teachers popped in, wanted to know if everything was okay, they realized there was nobody in the room. And they responded, yeah, well, we're fine. We just hope we're doing the right work for Mrs. Harrisick. They went, when they had to go to the bathroom, they took the pass to go to the bathroom. They were totally responsible without me. It was amazing. But they had learned that they can do that. And I even made it clear to them, you know, I'm not here to, you know, to be always, you know, telling you what to do. I'm going to give you the direction of what to do, and I expect you to take the direction. I was giving them the chance to be empowered. And that takes a degree of effort, too, because you want to get them clear about what the rules are. And you know, I was real clear about labeling and everything else. You know, that just doesn't happen. We support each other in a whole new way. So, yeah, it was great. Awesome. It was a moment for me, too. You know, it's totally unexpected for me, but it was great feedback.
Awesome.
Julie, Michelle.
Certainly given a lot of kids a gift. Excuse me, Jeannie, go ahead.
Michelle's in the chat room, and she just wanted to know if you've heard back from any of the kids that you taught after they became adults.
I did hear recently, maybe about 4 months ago, I received a card from one of my students, and she just said, I know that, you know, I have children now, and I remember all the things that you did for me, and I know it was way above the call of being a teacher. You even took us swimming. And she goes, I know that what you offered us was not the, you know, traditional teacher. And I just wanted to thank you. She wrote me a long thank you note and sent me pictures of her and her children and her family.
Cool.
But I haven't heard too many of them. Wait a minute. I have heard from another family who I have had daughters, and they wanted to get together with me when I get into Dayton, but I just haven't been back.
Nice. Well, that's the kind of giving that keeps on giving. That's pretty awesome. Thank you for your service, Julie.
Oh, you're welcome. It was definitely my opportunity to, you know, really, it's if you want to, as you have said, if you really want to heal, you know, you extend yourself to support others in their healing process. And as I extended myself to do that, I certainly was in the healing loop of it all. Sometimes quicker than I wanted to be.
I would that every child had the gift of a Mrs. Haverstick in their lives. But it's pretty awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You have any other thoughts to share, Julie?
Pardon me?
I say, any other thoughts to share, or maybe Dr. Kim's got a thought or a question for you.
Sure, I'm open.
Just gratitude. Just
that's awesome.
Well, you're one of my heroes.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You are one of mine, too. I appreciate it.
Cool.
I have been doing, I guess somebody had said something, I was working with a couple and they said, well, I guess you've been doing this a long time. I said, yes, you're right, about 27, 28 years of worksheets. And I was just, you know, thinking the other day how blessed I was to been looking for a way to change things in my life and, you know, came across you. And I was actually praying for that when you, you know, showed up at Antioch College. Of course, nothing happens by chance. It was one of those blessed coincidences, and I was looking, and I used that worksheet ever since then, and it's just so powerful, and we're so blessed with it. So I want to thank you, Michael, for being willing to put one foot in front of the other, and I acknowledge you for, you know, sharing that as enthusiastically as Patrick and I always talk, as enthusiastically as you always do.
Well, thank you for saying thank you, and we'll put a thank you in there to Billy Eastman, who is now,
let's see,
when we were there, Jeannie, I think she's now 93, and she's still doing A Course in Miracles class on a weekly basis and carrying on with the work.
Awesome.
Yeah, she opened
and
that
Julie,
door really often. Go ahead, Jeannie.
I just did a quick, she said 27 or 28 years. If you took 27 years, 365 days, and I know Julie does at least five a day, sometimes 30 a day, but at minimal five a day, that means you've done like 49,275 worksheets. You are definitely the worksheet queen.
Yeah, I did some math one time, and I was way into the 60,000. So, yeah, right? I agree. Yeah, and it's true. You know, that now there are days when I might not do five, but then I'll turn around and do 18. So it balances out.
Yeah, and during the intensives, you do so many more with everybody there. You just set up the worksheet classes and work with people. And I've seen you do 20 easily during just one session with different people and the way that you lead them through it. And it's just awesome to watch you do that with them.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I appreciate it. I think it's the greatest tool. And I asked you years ago, Michael, what's the most powerful tool that you teach? Because you were at the house, and this is probably, 27 years ago maybe. And you said, I said, what's the most powerful tool? And you said, the worksheet. It'll take you straight to God. Do you remember saying that to me?
Yep, that's it. That's what it does.
Yep. And so I took you seriously.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you for being there and pushing the button so we could say hi to you and catch up a little bit. How's the weather at Heartland right now?
Well, it's sunny, but cool, really cool. And it was quite windy, and I asked for the wind to kind of die down a little bit or slow down a little bit so I could go out and take a walk, and that's what I was doing, so I can listen to the radio show and walk and get a little sunshine.
Cool. Awesome. All right. We appreciate you. We'll hold you in the blessing.
Thank you very much. You too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Anybody else with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room to be aware of?
No, nobody has their hand up. There's several people on the switchboard, so we've got 12 minutes. If somebody presses one, it would put you straight in there.
No waiting. You just push that button. We're here to support you. What's your question? And while we're waiting for somebody to put a hand up, I'll just say that we'll be finishing up here in Miami tonight with the last of the pre-open workshops, Getting the Stress You Need at 6:30 at Universal Truth. It looks like we're going to do Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing on Saturday at UTC. So if you're in Fort Lauderdale, Miami area, that's where we'll be for the next couple of days. And then Sunday we'll start at CSL, Center for Spiritual Living in Fort Lauderdale. And we'll be doing a full five-day series of or six-day series, plus Mind Shifters and Soul Point Breathing. And so you're certainly most welcome to be joining us. We'll start Sunday afternoon, of course, with Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And then continue through the week with a series of free workshops. And then the next week, we're off for a week, aren't we, Jeannie? And then we'll be in Pompano?
That's correct.
Yeah, so we're actually going to get a week of
time. And we're doing a different series in both Fort Lauderdale and Pompano, so because the areas are close enough together that way people can actually catch like 10 different workshops. At Fort Lauderdale, we're doing Why and Empowered to Heal, Purpose, Circle of Life, and Laws of Living. We're off on Friday. Then we'll be doing Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. And then at Pompano, we'll be doing On Creating Consciously, Getting Distressed, Empowered to Heal, What is the World, and Codependence, and then also Mind Shifters. So if we do Mind Shifters this coming Sunday, you'll actually get three opportunities within the next 4 weeks to attend a Saturday Mind Shifter Still Point Breathing. So that's a very powerful workshop for anybody that has not done it. It's awesome to do a repeat for those who have. And then we'll be another week off, then I'll be doing the women's retreat, and then we've got the 3 days back at UTC. in Miami, and then we'll be heading up to Sebring.
Winter's just melting away.
Yeah.
So 646-200-4169 is our call-in number. If you're on the phone and you push 1, we'd be delighted to answer any questions we can and offer support. What's on your mind? How are these tools fitting for you? These ideas making sense? When you hear Julie talk about what she did in the classroom, most amazing. I remember one particular story where Julie had a student who was kicked out of a couple of different schools, kicked off the school bus, and introduced to just out of the blue with no background, just introduced in her classroom, and literally showed up in the classroom being, you know, larger than the rest of the kids, coming into the classroom on his hands and knees and barking like a dog and literally viciously biting other children. And that child went from that state of mind to where his mother came into the classroom, and Julie worked with both he and his mother. And if I remember correctly, a psychiatrist had warned the mother to keep her door locked at night because the child was such a danger. And within a matter of weeks of Julie working with both he and the mother came back with the fact that he was her model child and ended up being a helper for her in the classroom with the forgiveness process. So, you know, there's no such thing as a bad kid. There are kids who've been given this image, this picture, these words of how bad they are, and reinforced, they tend to play out what they've been told. But when given the opportunity, the so-called bad kid loves to get rid of that reputation. And if they are in an environment where they're supported in making shifts and changes, then they shift and change. And so it's pretty amazing when you're aware of some of the stories. Julie's got a series of pictures in her book of these before and after pictures. She would have kids come into the classroom and she'd hand them a full box of colors and tell them to draw a picture of themselves. And then at the end of their class experience, she'd ask them to draw another picture with the full box of colors. And the difference of night and day, starting out with kids all dark and black, and, you know, by the end of a semester with Julie, they'd have bright colored hearts in their chests and, you know, smiling muscles and just, you know, it's nothing short of miraculous what can be done with these kids if they're given the chance. And too often the children are simply a reflection of the adults around them. And the adults, not knowing how to change their own minds, can't support the child. So they label the child as incorrigible. But the truth is, every child's a creator made of the same creator stuff as all of us. And we can acknowledge that in the child, acknowledge that in ourselves, that awesome act of presence of love kicks in, takes over, and plays out. So pretty sweet when you see what can happen. And of course, sadly, we live in a culture that thinks you can beat a kid into being good. You can beat a child into, you know, they call it discipline. Total, complete misinterpretation and misunderstanding of the word disciple, which means properly taught. You can't discipline in terms of abusing a child into good behavior. It just doesn't happen. There's a story that Suzanne Tucker told one day on the show here back a year or so ago in her conscious parenting workshops that she had a parent who came from a family tradition where if you're about to be whipped, you have to go cut your own switch, and sent her child up to cut a switch. And the child came back with apologies that he couldn't reach a switch, but he brought a handful of rocks and said, "Here, Mom, throw these at me." I couldn't reach a switch. And of course, it's really clear when you listen to that little story that the child learns that this is an adult who wants to hurt me, who wants to beat me. And so, you know, if I can't get a switch, then I'll hand her a rock so she can do it. And a horrendous, insane way for a child to have to think, because the adult knows no better than to model decency and human life, and only knows how to model the fist that was used on them. And, of course, we hear lots of people. I've heard over the years so many people, well, it never hurt me when I got that beating. It's like, oh, yeah, it did hurt you terribly. Every child who gets the message that this person is here to cherish me and love me and honor me wants to hurt me. They've been hurt deeply by that, just by that message, just by getting that. And so we're here to bring about a shift, to bring about a change. And Julie's book, Healing Children, Loving Children, you can go to the website, www.whyagain.org, and you can know Healing Children, Loving Children. And Julie's just done a fabulous job of how to introduce these ideas to kids and how to bring them into your own life in a way that will empower you to discipline, truly disciple your child. And it's pretty awesome when we see how the results that produces. So, do you need anybody with a hand up at the phone queue?
No, nobody has their hand up, and there are no questions in the chat room. So we're down to about 2 minutes, though.
Well, let me just share one story of a child that I know personally that Julie worked with. This young man was about 5 when he first came to Heartland, and he would have been labeled with every label that the world of pill pushers could put on him, ADD and LCD and NBD and, you know, whatever initials you can imagine, he had them. And with a holy terror, and his parents started to work with him with these tools. And I remember one day he was there visiting his mom, who was at an intensive, and he and his two sisters, he'd gone from holy terror to model child. And someone in the classroom said something to the effect of, yeah, somebody had made them mad. And this little guy just, you know, he didn't even know he was listening in the classroom. But he obviously was, and he spoke up and he said, well, just this morning, my sister, she bringed up my anger, this little Ozark kid, and, you know, he was offering a correction to the adult that was in projection, expressing how someone else had made them mad. And here's this little kid who's now about 7, and he knows that he's responsible for his anger, and that, yes, his sister did something to bring his anger up. And so he expressed this, my sister, she bringed up my anger, and I was kind of shocked that he spoke up just out of the blue. I turned and said, well, what did you do then? And she said, I just asked my mother for a worksheet. And that's a product of really working with kids and showing them that healing is possible, and we don't need to leave them in the dust of a world of hostility and fear that runs so many lives. And so once again, we are appreciative of the fact that you're with us for the day. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. If you're going to be around in Miami, come join us tonight at UTC. And give the world the best gift you can possibly give. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.